It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Alright, well, the most important step is to get to the roof. So let's call the elevator and head that way.
You look so defeated lying there in your new twin size.
Or 23623, depending on how you like to write your dates. And you're 2023-06-23-1900-02, because we are in Zulu time here on and on radio, which is where you're listening, and it's news time. Oh boy, all right, I made it. I'm looking out to make sure there's no intense noisemakers around, and there's not. So hello, you are tuned in. You're on and on radio. I think I got the mic turned up. Welcome, one and all. It is Friday. Not a whole ton of busyness in the world, but there is some. And so I've got the death and destruction for you. If you want to hang out and talk during the show and just in general interact, you can always do that by SSHing over to sdf.org. If you're polite or just want to have fun, use tty.sdf.org and that'll bounce you around to whatever, it'll round robin you to a good host. And then just launch Commode Chat. It's C-O-N. You call it Com. And that's the chat program. That's how everybody on SDF talks, or a lot of people do. You can, of course, always join IRC or XMPP/JabberChat. There's Matrix. There's Mastodon, Lemmy. There's all sorts of different ways you can interact. But for a non-radio shows, here's a motorcycle. Pretty much always we're on Commode Chat and Com, hanging out with cool people like Resner and LCD and Stugs in the house. Quentin's here. Hello. It looks like I found the noise. There's there's some kind of mechanical pump or something going on down the block, about a block away. So I'm walking away from that. But a lot of aircraft. I think this time of year, in the spring, it seems like the aircraft are flying over the office a lot. But now, as we've turned to summer, they don't seem to be flying overhead as much. So I wonder if it's maybe just a number of flights thing or something. I don't know. Anyway, you can hang out and have all sorts of fun in Com. So please check it out. But if you don't, that's fine too. There's just a lot of news you can use. So let's get into it. Of course, Just make sure we're sinking. Because last thing you want is to not be sunk. Whew. It is, I didn't mention the weather. It is 34 degrees presently. High of 36. Expected real feel or heat indexes of 40. So I'm trying to stay hydrated. And it's funny because like on TV in the spring they were like, oh, be sure you go outside and enjoy the beautiful weather. And now on TV they're like, it's hot. There's a heat advisory. Stay inside if you can. Don't go outside unless you have to. It's like, oh man, what a difference a day makes, I guess. Anyway, syncing's done. Let's pull up our bookmarks. We just go over to bookmarks, desktop bookmarks, bookmark menu, news to me, June 23rd. Oh man, so now we're ready to go. All right guys, so check it out. First up, a fire extinguisher explosion in Bangkok kills one student and injures five others. That's right. The thing that's supposed to put out fires exploded. One student was killed and five were injured after a fire extinguisher exploded during a fire drill at Rajavinit Mattathayam School in Bangkok's Dusit district on Friday morning. The five students injured in the blast were rushed to Klang Hospital in the Thai capital for treatment. Police suspect the explosion during the fire drill is related to a reused fire extinguisher without a safety valve. It was left in sunlight and high temperature raised its pressure, probably leading to an explosion, said a police chief. Ministry of Education officials are investigating the cause of the blast, with Permanent Secretary Athapan Sankawisi saying officials from his ministry may have been sent to the school to determine the cause. They expressed condolences to relatives of the deceased and victims, saying the ministry will assist and compensate them. Provincial education offices nationwide have been instructed to ensure safety for students. So, wild. Yeah, sorry, it's true, Stug. Thai names are very hard for me. Yeah, Quentin, it is warm out here. But yeah, Thai names are very hard for me. Thai names, Thai and Malay names, I have a lot of trouble with. And then sometimes in French. Anyway, yeah, it's wild. It's just so amazing. They were hanging out, and then they go for a fire drill, and they bring their fire extinguishers with them, and they set it outside, and then it got too hot and blew up on them. Oh, man, well, that stinks for them, but you know what? Other people die in weird ways, but not today, buddy. Today we're talking about some deaths in the UK that happened a while ago. A Romanian man accused of being a ringleader of a people smuggling operation pleaded guilty on Friday to the manslaughter of 39 Vietnamese immigrants who were found dead in a lorry in southeast England. Marius Mihai Drahici, 50, was detained by police in Romania in August 2022 and charged by British prosecutors with 39 counts of manslaughter and conspiracy to assist unlawful immigration. Drahici pleaded guilty to the charges at London's Old Bailey Court and will be sentenced at a date to be fixed. Very English way to say it. The victims, the youngest of whom were two 15-year-old boys, suffocated in the truck's container as they were being transported to what they had hoped would be new lives in Britain. I'm on the edge of the garage up here, leaning on the railing, and my badge almost flew off. I was like, I wouldn't be able to get back in the office, and it'd be hard to explain where my badge went. The bodies of the migrants were discovered inside the container at a port near London in October 2019. This is just kind of a follow-up to an old story, but yeah, it was really grisly when it happened. Since then, they've had this same kind of thing happen in the United States. There were like 50 guys in the back of a semi-truck that died. After they crossed the border into the U.S. So yeah, real sad kind of thing. Of course, we can't talk death and destruction without talking about our poor animal friends. A toxic algae is killing hundreds of dolphins and sea lions, which are then washing up on the beaches in Southern California. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has said that more than 1,000 animals have grown sick or died just this past month. While algae blooms may be a seasonal problem, the climate crisis could be making the issue worse. More than 200 reports of animals in distress reach rescue groups every day. Biological sciences professor at the University of Southern California, David Karen, told the BBC that I've heard of a number of people walking the beaches who have seen sick animal after sick animal. Animal rescue groups are scrambling to try to get boots on the ground to get the animals protected. Seabirds, dolphins, and sea lions are growing ill because of the expansion of some algae producing domoic acid, a toxin. You know, sometimes acid is a great is pretty fun to ingest, but not if it makes you ground beaches you or kills you, I guess. Anyway, Dr. Karen told the BBC that the algal fish bloom disrupts food webs. Shellfish, anchovies, and sardines eat the harmful materials before being eaten by animals further up the food chain. Oh man, no Harley guy yet, but there is a guy with cowboy boots and riding a 10 speed down the highway. Wow. That's a ballsy move, brother. I'm guessing his car is broke down or something. But yeah, it was a man with a 10 speed, but he's wearing like a big hat and cowboy boots and jeans. So we'll see. Golly, this part of town has a lot of Teslas passing by, and I haven't seen one Tesla driver who was looking at the road as they drove by. Very scary. Anyway, so yeah, so RIP our dolphin friends. It sounds like, especially in California, they're having a bad time. Very bad time. An update on the boat disaster that happened earlier this week. At least 350 Pakistanis were on board the packed trawler that capsized off southern Greece on June 14th. Rana Sanula told Parliament his estimate was based on families who have sought government help and had taken DNA tests. Egyptians and Syrians were also among the hundreds of migrants feared dead. The death toll remains at 82, while 104 survived, including 12 Pakistanis. Given this estimate, Mr. Sanula said that for Pakistan, perhaps this has been such a large toll in any incident, even in terrorist incidents. The boat is thought to have set off from Egypt and picked up passengers in the city of Tobruk, who paid thousands of dollars for the trip. The UN says between 400 and 750 people could have been crammed on the vessel. Of course, that's really sad and sucks. They paid a lot of money to be on the boat that was not safe. Of course, this is also what we can say about the people who did that little submarine tour. The Coast Guard admits that they heard an explosion when the Titanic sub lost contact. The U.S. Coast Guard admitted an explosion was heard in the vicinity of where the submersible was when it lost contact with its support vessel. Of course, it's important to note, no similar sounds were heard throughout the four-day search and rescue operation. Despite the explosion heard, the Coast Guard said it considered all of its acoustic data and determined to continue with its mission, since there was no definitive noises at that point. I talked to one of my friends is a retired submariner, whatever. They used to be in a submarine. They were in a submarine in the 60s and 70s. And essentially what they were letting me know was that there's a system that they have that's listening underwater. Underwater is very noisy. Lots of sonar stuff going on. But there's a system that will automatically detect, like, if a submarine has an implosion, it makes a certain noise. And that's programmed into the system to alert them, hey, this blew up. Or this was a bomb, or this was a landmine, or whatever. But the capsule, this little experimental capsule, it's not in the system to be recognized as a definitive explosion. So they heard something pop, but they didn't know if that was the boat or not. So that helped me understand it a little better. I don't know if it helps you understand why they heard an explosion or an implosion and then didn't go look right there for it. At least it was an instant death. But they were all kind of rich guys. It's kind of funny because I mentioned this yesterday, maybe to you guys, maybe to just some friends, but it was like, you know, there were five people that died. They paid, it cost them $1 million and they died. And it was like the government, our government, you know, the government of France and the United States and Canada all spent all this huge amounts of money, all these resources. But meanwhile, our friends over here in the Mediterranean, there's like hundreds of people dying at a time and nobody, it's like, whatever. It's not our problem. All right. Yeah, there's no tourist sub-signatures. Yep, exactly, Tobe. Tobe knows what's up. Anyway, all right. So let's keep on moving. We don't want to just sit here and talk about how good, how glad we are people are dead. But there is some update. South African authorities say dangerously high levels of methane prevented search teams from entering the mine. At least 31 people are believed to have died in a gas explosion in a disused mine shaft in South Africa's Free State province. So the explosion happened on May 18th, but they've only now started talking about it. The dead are believed to be from Lesotho, which reported the incident to South African authorities. They died in a ventilation shaft in Virginia mine in Welcome City, the Department of Minerals, Resource, and Energy has said. So it's not clear what caused their death, but an investigation determined that methane levels were very high in the ventilation shaft. So that seems to be the problemo. At least it didn't explode, I guess. So anyway, they all suffocated and died. So that's 31 deaths. I thought this was an update because there was another mine thing that had a bunch of deaths in the mine, but that's okay. Oh, hey, lawnmower man. All right, I'm going to walk over here so as to not be in view of the guy mowing his lawn. Man, it's 1918, not to be 1919 UTC, which makes me want to remind you guys to please stick around in 11 minutes at 1930 UTC every goddamn day, not just Monday through Friday, but Monday through Monday, every goddamn day of the day, every day of the week, every goddamn day is the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe. Fun show, it airs at 1930 UTC right here on and on radio, so stick around for that. It's a lot of fun. We've been seeing a lot of owls. We learned how there's a little owl buddy who makes a little rising hoot noise. He's like, and then there's the bigger owls and some other dudes hanging out. It's a lot of fun. Check out the dudes with Tobe. Let's see. We got all sorts of other stuff to talk about. Here's something that's very important that everyone should know. It's a very big deal. The U.S. toy giant Hasbro has brought back the iconic Furby robotic creature, which was hugely popular when it launched a quarter of a century ago. The firm hopes a new generation of children will discover their own curious little creature. The new Furby has its familiar bulbous eyes, yellow beak, and colorful fur. It also speaks in gibberish and responds to hugs, pats, and tickles. The announcement comes as the toy industry faces a slowdown in demand. Over the past few years, we've done a lot of research to understand what kids want to see in a new Furby. The new toy is programmed to have more than 600 responses. It can react to commands, mimic sounds, dance, and be fed. Furby, which was originally launched in 1998, became popular around the world. In the first 3 years after being launched, more than 40 million of them were sold. So, Furbies are coming back. Very important, very big news. Oh, wow. The guy with the push mower, the other side of the yard, there's a guy on a riding lawnmower. And they're just they didn't go around the yard and pick up the trash, it looks like, because he's hitting a lot of rocks and sticks and stuff. Anyway, let's check in on Kong. Oh, Tobe saying lots of owl sounds on DGC today. Get your headphones ready. The real reason here is that we need more demonic hellspawn in the world. It'll be pretty wild. All right, so what else is going on? There's, well, I say that a lot, but that's kind of my transition phrase. Well, there's 10 minutes to go, so I'm going to give you a bit of a longer story. This is a story, because it's Pride Month, the month of June is Pride Month. It's Pride Month because of the Stonewall Uprising that happened in New York many years ago. Well, 50 years later, the upstairs lounge fire is more important than ever to remember. If you don't know about it, 50 years ago, on June 24th, so tomorrow it'll be 50 years ago, 1973, an arsonist set the upstairs lounge, a queer nightclub in New Orleans' French Quarter, ablaze. When the flames cleared, 32 people were dead and another 15 were injured. The attack would stand as the largest attack of mass murder against the LGBTQ plus community until the 2016 Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando. If you don't know the story, you're not alone. Despite the scale of the tragedy, the upstairs lounge fire is still a relatively obscure part of history. Part of the reason for that is because for a very long time, New Orleans virtually refused to grapple openly with what had happened. Nobody was ever charged with the crime, even though there were some prominent suspects. In a gross mishandling of victims' remains, four bodies were dumped into unmarked graves. There were no signage or plaque to mark where they were buried, so nobody knows for sure where they are buried at this point. A lot of people, even if they were alive at the time, don't recall the upstairs fire because the story just got swept under the rug. Johnny Townsend, who wrote a history of the fire titled, I don't want to say it out loud, it's Let the F Words Burn, which is like the gay slur, a reference to a comment that survivors of the fire reported hearing. The way the city reacted after the fire was a hate crime in and of itself, he says. Victims who survived couldn't tell anyone they were there, at the bar, or that their friends or lovers had died for fear of being outed. By 1973, the French Quarter had been a center of queer life in New Orleans for decades. For queer people raised in the rural South, neighborhoods like the French Quarter gave them a unique serenity. Part of what made the fire so sinister was that after the attack, the anti-gay climate prevented many victims from being able to fully seek justice. The city's reaction 50 years ago was so horrible and homophobic that it made it political. There was the initial crime of the arson and the second crime. Now, with the 50th anniversary of the fire taking place at a time when LGBTQ plus rights are more under more of a sustained threat than they have been for years, people have worked hard to keep the memory of the victims alive, say that it's especially important to connect today's struggle with the past. So, there's more to it in The Nation. If you go to thenation.com, they got a long piece. But I just wanted to share that because it's one of those pieces of history that, like, I've seen it before and read about it, but not a lot of people have, and it's something that I think more people need to know about. It's one of those pieces of history. It's like, oh yeah, the United States, it's kind of funny because as a group in general, the West, kind of, we think of ourselves as like so progressive and we're, you know, everybody's fine and we're the best. But if you were to objectively look, it's like, ugh, no sir, the West, the United States is not always the best. It's not always the best guy. Anyway, let's check in on Calm here. Toby, oh, here we go. Stug, he was the Furby Polyphonics guy, yeah. Ghost Hunter and Ghost Adventures did a special episode about this fire. Ah, interesting. Yeah, Quentin learned this today. Yeah, people are not great to each other. Oh wow! You know what I bet? I think this, because they're doing a bunch of yard work at this house. I think this whole family just moved into this house across the street from us, because there is now a lady doing the weed eater. There's a kid with a leaf blower, and there's a man on a riding lawnmower and a young guy pushing a push mower. So it's a whole family affair. Either the family is working as a team, or they're new people. And since it's the end of the month, I'm thinking maybe they're new residents. Anyway, that was 5 minutes worth of talking. yeah, it was in the 50s, so I wouldn't think progressive. The 50s I wouldn't think as progressive either, but it is still kind of like a horrible, it's still pretty horrible. All right. What else is happening? I keep saying that. Let's talk about nuclear power for a minute. There's two pieces of news that I want to be sure you know about. First, the Straytech Global is hoping to produce a pilot plant of the high-temperature modular reactor, which is derived from the Southern African Pebble Bed Modular Reactor Program. South Africa's PBMR was to have been made a small-scale high-temperature reactor using TRISO fuel, with helium as a coolant, able to supply process heat as well as generating electricity. The nature of the fuel gives the reactor a high degree of passive safety, which is why everybody likes that TRISO fuel. TRISO fuel is like the pellets with ceramic coating on the outside. So anyway, in 2010, the government formally announced its decision to no longer invest in the project, which was then placed under care and maintenance to protect its intellectual property and assets. Anyway, the project's a 35-megawatt electric reactor. It takes up about the size of a football pitch, and its goal is to kind of point this towards the industrial uses, you know, have a big steel foundry that has one of these reactors in it, and then they can just smelt steel using the heat from the reactor. So anyway, that is number one on our nuclear list. Number two, Norway. Norsk Kernkraft has signed a letter of intent with TVO Nuclear Services, a consulting company wholly owned by Finnish utility Teollisuuden Voima Oyj, TVO, Tango Victor Oscar, to jointly investigate the deployment of small modular reactors in Norway. SMRs are everywhere. They're taking off. It's going to be great. Pretty soon you're going to have like, it's just going to be like, oh, hey, do you have a big office building? Yeah, let's just go ahead and put a small modular reactor at the base of it. And then that way you can provide power for the neighborhood you're living in. Oh, shucks. More engine noise. They're agreeing to work together to work on this new small modular reactor. So that should be cool. I'm glad there's another project for it. Oh, here's something. This will be our last story before we disappear. Doctors in England to hold a 5-day strike. Junior doctors in England will strike for 5 consecutive days over pay in July, the longest single walkout in the history of the NHS, according to the British Medical Association. The strike will take place between July 13th to 18th. The trade union, which represents UK doctors, said it heard nothing from Prime Minister Rishi Sunak or Health Secretary Stephen Barclay about reopening negotiations since the collapse of talks earlier this year. The extended protest is a fresh blow to Mr. Sunak, who is currently under pressure to fix a mortgage crisis that's squeezing finances of millions of borrowers. Hundreds of thousands of planned hospital appointments have been canceled so far in the dispute with doctors, who are demanding a pay raise, and there have been warnings about the safety of hospitals with thousands of medics off work. The strike also threatens to undermine Mr. Sunak's priority to shorten NHS waiting lists. With a general election next year, the Prime Minister is facing growing calls to get a grip on strikes that have been hitting public services for months. 20,000 railway workers will also walk out over pay on July 20th, 22nd, and 29th. So yeah, we're going to have another series of strikes happening in the UK. I'm going to try and walk a little bit away from the noise. But I'll just tell you this. Thanks for listening. We've got the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe coming up in just a moment. And I'll be back on Monday. Please enjoy that. And also tune in tomorrow at the same time, 1900 UTC, for Publius' show, A Step Farther Up.
Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.